Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies, and more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Josh Melick, co-founder and CEO of Broadly, which helps local businesses establish and optimize their online presence, specifically with respect to online reviews. And before that, Josh has had an established career in different parts of the marketing technology stack. So we talked to Josh from our studio in San Francisco about that journey, what he's learned from it, and what we can all take away from that. So here's our discussion with Josh Melick. So Josh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Sure. So we have a lot to talk about, including diving deeper into a lot of the things I just mentioned. But first, let's start with the present. So tell us a bit about yourself and about Broadly for those unfamiliar.
Yeah, sure. So I'm CEO, co-founder of Broadly. I like to give the Broadly pitch like this. The consumer landscape and kind of as consumers, there's just been a lot of change over the last, call it 10 years. Where as consumers, when I need to find a local service provider, it's all about reviews. It's looking online, picking a few good businesses to contact. So it starts with getting those reviews. So you kind of get chosen and get picked up. And the next hard thing is communications has changed a lot. The thing that everyone likes to complain about is how hard it is to get a hold of a local business owner. And so we want to solve that too. So we want to help them get those great reviews, and we want to help them better communicate with their customers. And so those are the two things that we do here.
Yeah, and those are big ones, of course. Presence and communications we always talk about in kind of local media. And reviews is interesting because it's one of those universal things. And of course, it's so influential today. And it's always been, as we know, one of the most impactful forms of local marketing, or what I should say is word of mouth has been the most impactful form. And that's just the digital kind of manifestation of that principle today, right?
That's right. And that's how we talk about it, is that it's always been about word of mouth. And so reviews are word of mouth. There's a little bit of difference. I don't know how many friends you have, Mike, or how many people you talk to, probably more than me, but word of mouth only goes so far in the real world. When you put it online now, tens, hundreds, thousands, millions of people can read that stuff. So it's amplified word of mouth.
Yeah, it's word of mouth plus network effect.
That's right.
So that's great. So we're going to circle back to a lot of that. I want to get into some of the kind of strategy and positioning for Broadly and your product set. But first, as we like to do on the show, we're going to kind of go back in time and talk about how you got to this point. So let's start kind of at the beginning. So tell us about the initial path that kind of brought you into digital media and advertising, and kind of characterize that time in your life for us.
Yeah, so I'm going to go all the way back. My dad was a contractor, so I grew up in a small business home. He ran a construction company. I spent my Saturdays and weekends and summers pounding nails and doing all of that stuff. But also as the proprietor, he had to deal with the Yellow Pages, and this was in the 90s, and the internet was coming out and computers were coming out and marketing. I remember the Yellow Pages rep sitting at the kitchen tables. We went over ad sizes, and I helped get him on QuickBooks and all of that stuff, and built his first website. So, it is kind of personal. It goes all the way back. I didn't actually mean to make that a career, and so we can kind of go through that story a little bit more. For me, kind of dealing with the challenges of a local business starts from childhood.
Yeah, it's amazing how many guests we have on the show that are similarly come from small business families. I myself had, we had a Christmas tree farm. I also grew up working construction, even though I'm less of a practitioner and more of like a analyst on the sidelines. That resonates with me. So then what happened? Walk us through the kind of the remaining career path that kind of like launched you into this space and then got you to today. You spent some time at Ingenio, which was acquired by AT&T, of course. You spent some time at DemandForce, all very local, relevant kind of players. So talk about that kind of progression.
Yeah, there's one more there before those guys. So I went to school, and I always knew I was going to get into software. I've always been a builder, but always kind of wanted to be in software and in that side of the world and tech. And so I kind of knew that from a young age. So my degrees are in engineering. Out of grad school, I got the opportunity to do a startup, actually. This was the early days of Web 2.0 and music and online social media. And so did a startup then, which kind of launched my career into software, moved here to San Francisco, and got to kind of really experience startup. That company didn't succeed, but it made me realize, one, kind of the business of software and the business of online. And so I wanted to get into advertising then at that point, because we were classic internet startup in those days where we thought we had some ideas, but we didn't actually know how to get paid. And then kind of advertising is the business model of the web. And so I wanted to get into advertising. And that's what led me to Ingenio, actually, is this interesting concept of, hey, it's an advertising company, but it's a local advertising company. So I can kind of marry these two things that I have interest in. So ended up there. And then into Demandforce and AT&T acquired Ingenio and got to be part of the Yellow Pages, do a lot of interesting stuff there in their ad world, and I ended up running the entire ad platform for them, mobile and online and doing all sorts of advertising and RTB and bidding and display ads and search ads. And then I kind of stepped back and said, you know what, we're spending a lot of time and energy and a lot of technology into picking the right ad and optimizing for, CPMs. Like, what if we spent some of this technology just better talk to our customers and better communicated? And that's when kind of came across Demandforce and what they were doing is, hey, this is more interesting. Let's build platforms that make communication better, make scheduling easier, make follow-up better. And so got a chance to jump into that company and be a part of their rise. And I think the broader industry at that time kind of went through that a little bit, as you saw ad tech turn into MarTech. Yep. And, to play the buzzword game here. And, so Demandforce was a great company. And, yeah, we got picked up by Intuit, which is, one of the biggest companies in local, and QuickBooks, and got to be part of that team. And, but then post that, I felt like there was still a market need. I mean, Demandforce, Intuit, we weren't addressing kind of mobile. We weren't addressing, really the change in communications, the change from, phone calls and online to messaging and mobile messaging and the change of social media and reviews. And so that's kind of how Broadly came about.
Yeah, I want to talk about how that all leads right into Broadly. But first, a little bit more kind of about you and your background. One thing I want to zero in on is kind of some of the technical aspects, such as, you have an MS in electrical engineering and some of the other things you mentioned. And it's interesting, we talk to, and me as an analyst, talk to a lot of executives in the local marketing and advertising space. And I would say it's probably a minority that have technical backgrounds. I'm not sure if you see that too. So one thing we always like to kind of dig into on the show is what I like to call the kind of cross training that executives do throughout their career in picking up skills such as managerial, such as kind of the way the ad tech world works and some of that parochial knowledge, but also that additional kind of technical background. How has that kind of, led or lent to your success, I should say, in terms of having that additional dimension of perspective when it comes to deeper knowledge of product?
Yeah, I want to take this as two different questions. So ask me the cross-training one again. I'll answer the technical one first.
All right.
I do have a technical background. So I don't think you need one necessarily. But I think it's something that certainly is beneficial. And you look at many of the great founders, great CEOs, they're all pretty technical. Like, you have to understand your medium. That doesn't mean writing code always, but you definitely have to understand your medium. I always knew I kind of wanted to do business too. And I had a professor in undergrad when I was doing engineering physics. And I was like, should I go get a master's, or should I get an MBA, or should I just go to the workforce? And he was like, listen, he's like an older guy, like, grab me and like, listen, son, you can always go the business route, but like, you need to start here. you know, and depending on which part of the market you're working in, I mean, there is a lot of innovation happening, and understanding how all these pieces fit together.
Sure.
You know, the more skills you have there, the better.
Mm-hmm. So let's move into Broadly, how this all kind of leads into Broadly. So we already talked about, at a high level, some of the things that Broadly's doing, some of your philosophies. But let's go back to the beginning and kind of Broadly's founding. What were kind of some of the drivers and the inception? You know, walk us through the founding story.
Yeah, I mean, on one side, there's the just the idea that I always wanted to do this, to start a company, to, you know, do a startup, be CEO, I guess. And, you know, so looking in it for you know, when and how am I going to do that? And then just at that time with Intuit and Demandforce and kind of where I wanted to go with that product inside of that company, and pitching Brad Smith on where I thought the market was going, and, you know, them kind of not wanting to go there, not yet, really is probably the better answer for those guys.
Yep.
And so, you know, decided that there's a chance, and it kind of in many ways to me, it felt like, you know, this kind of now or never thing, but you know, it's this huge emotional decision to, you know, I'm an executive, I'm on a comp plan, there's plenty of money I left on the table, and here I am going to go quit my job, my family thinks I'm crazy, and you know, so you go through all this like emotional gut-wrenching, like, am I going to quit my job, am I going to do a startup, especially in this type of case, like, you know, sometimes people start companies out of, you know, they got nothing else to do, so you have to, but you know, it's just this emotional thing. You quit your job, and at the time, like, you know, Intuit was a big company. I was, you know, I had a lot of direct reports. You know, I'm working in an office with, like, it's social. There's lots of people. I'm super busy. Lots of email, meetings, yada, yada. And then you quit your job, and it's like this crazy high point for you from this, like, emotional point of view. You just went through all this, decided to quit, this huge epoch event. And then the next, you know, the next Monday, I'm sitting at my house, you know, by myself. No one's around, no one cares, you know, and so you want to tell people about it, but they're all busy, they have jobs, they're working, and there you sit by yourself, and, you know, it's this crazy time when, you know, no one really cares until you actually do something, until you actually build a company, or you have a product, or you start to scale. Even now, four plus years in, it's like, people are just now starting to listen or care, because we've actually done something.
So we're going to actually pause there for a commercial break. When we come back, more with Josh Melick.
Hi, everyone. It's Mike Bullen, lead analyst at Street Fight, here to tell you about Brandify Summit, which is an event for brands that want to succeed in local. It's hosted by Brandify, which is Street Fight's owner, and it's an industry-leading provider of location-based digital marketing for brands to connect with their customers. So the event will take place in LA, September 17th through 19th, at the Intercontinental, which I'm told is the tallest building in town. And this year's theme is Building the Next Generation of Local, and it'll feature interactions with top influencers in local, as well as an A-list program that's really coming together with speakers from Amazon and Google and Microsoft and several others. So we hope to see you there, and you can find out more at BrandifySummit.com.
So we're back. My guest is Josh Melick. So Josh, before the break, we were talking about some of the early days of Broadly, the founding story. So continuing on there, what were some of the kind of challenges you faced in early days, and what kind of lessons do you have for early stage startup founders, whether it be about classic growth and scaling challenges, whether it be about kind of building team? What are some of the things that stick out for you?
Yeah, you know, building something from nothing is really hard. And so you have to just start, and you have to start making decisions, and you have to focus on what your customers need, and what you're going to build, and why people might want to buy it or pay for it. And you know, and these are all really hard questions, and if you haven't dealt with those directly, like, they can be pretty tough. And a lot of times when you're inside of a bigger company, you know, you're often far removed from some of those hard decisions. You know, I think I was lucky in my career in going through a couple of acquisitions and going through a couple of different companies. I got the opportunity to kind of be in the room a lot for big discussions and board meetings and strategic discussions, and, you know, mentors that helped me see a lot. And, you know, and then pair that with some of that, you know, hard knock stuff growing up in construction, like, you know, you just got to kind of get after it. And yeah. I don't know, that's what we did.
Now, another kind of aspect of that, some of those challenges and think milestones and trials that a lot of early companies go through is funding. So Broadly has received a few rounds of venture funding from Foundry Group and others, good firms. So what are your kind of biggest learnings from that whole process? And what advice do you have for entrepreneurs seeking outside funding? And not just kind of the how, but in some cases, the if. I think, you know, venture funding, I think, has gotten... it's turned into a bit of a vanity metric in Silicon Valley, and you know, sometimes the over-reliance on that is apparent. But also, it's something that can scale growth and something that, when done right, can absolutely be a growth engine. So what are your thoughts on that overall?
Yeah, you know, there's no one right way. And so it's really about just being honest with what are you trying to build? What's the company's goals? What are you going after? Obviously venture capital is sexy and Silicon Valley and all this type of stuff. There's a lot of hype, but you know, it's doing a deal with the devil. Let's be honest. and so you just have to know what you're signing up for. And yeah. You know, you can make good money in a lifestyle business. You can make good money in a venture capital business. You can make, you know, it depends. What are you trying to do and what are you trying to build? I mean, is it about the money? Is it about the product? Is it about the customer base? And, you know, then you just got to kind of follow the formula, but you can't pick and choose. Like, they each have a path, and, yep. and you got to kind of sign up for that. And so in our case, and I've been through several startups and, you know, that have raised venture capital and here in the Silicon Valley. And so we always knew that we wanted to build a venture caliber business. I'm a product guy at heart, and we think there is a large venture opportunity here, in the way communication and conversations have changed, and the way mobile and technology has impacted the local markets. But it's certainly not the only way. Fundraising is, you know, I don't know, you can ask some questions about that side too, but you know, so we decided that that's what we wanted to be, but it puts us on a certain path, and we have to know that we're on that path.
Yeah. Well, and your underlying point about kind of it depends reminds me of one of my favorite metaphors when it comes to venture capital, which is that, you know, it's like rocket fuel. Rocket fuel is great. If you're building a rocket, it is the tool of choice, obviously. But if you're building a nice house that should operate on natural gas, rocket fuel is something that is probably an explosion hazard, right?
That's right. It is explosive. So, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You have to know that venture capitalists, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this here in the Silicon Valley recently of like, you know, they've got power law curves and they're looking for billion-dollar returns. And so, yeah, so they want you to either blow up or make it to space. And they don't want you to, you know, just end up with a nice house at the end. That's a failure for them.
Well, right. And so that takes optionality off the table for the founder.
It does. And obviously the numbers vary here depending on how much you've raised and who you raised from and all of that stuff. But, you know.
Yep. So sticking with kind of some of the learnings, the company, one obviously kind of big topic, especially these days, is culture. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, is cultural fit something that's good? I think that's being challenged a lot these days, versus more diversity. I don't mean diversity just in terms of ethnic and gender diversity, but diversity of ideas and personalities and backgrounds. And, you know, there's probably a sweet spot and there's no right answer, like a lot of the discussion we've had so far. But I guess this all leads up to a question of how would you characterize Broadly's culture? And I'll also preface that before you answer with, you know, I was doing some research before this and I was on Glassdoor, and your ratings there are actually stellar. So I'll just cite some of these. So 4.7 review overall, and that's a pretty decent sample out of about 58 reviews. And then your CEO approval level is actually 92%. So impressive numbers there. What's kind of been your playbook at a high level for the culture you've created?
Yeah, well first let's kind of just start at the beginning that I do believe that culture is paramount importance. Mm-hmm. Now, culture, you know, you can establish culture on different things. And some people think, you can establish culture on just, you know, we go drinking together, or people who look like me can be culture. I don't think those are the best the best ones, you know, because I think the diversity and some of these other things are add to that. And I think history shows that. So, you know, for us, obviously there's passion and affinity around serving small business and local business. And, you know, I shared my story about growing up in that home. And like many of the people here share that story. Being in Oakland is another kind of, you know, we're outside of San Francisco. And so you can kind of sell that as a positive. There can be some negatives, but sell it as a positive. And, you know, culture is very powerful. It can be very dangerous. The book Sapiens recently talks about just kind of, you know, how you know, when used well, it's very powerful, but how it can also be used, you know, for evil or whatever, I guess you could say, as well. So it's definitely a powerful thing. And if you're going to build a company and you're going to fight together and you're going to win, like you have to tap into those emotions.
Yep. That's great. So actually we're going to pause for a quick commercial break. When we come back, more with Josh Melick.
Hi everyone, it's Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, here to tell you about Brandify Summit, which is an event for brands that want to succeed in local. It's hosted by Brandify, which is Street Fight's owner, and it's an industry-leading provider of location-based digital marketing for brands to connect with their customers. So the event will take place in LA September 17th through 19th at the Intercontinental, which I'm told is the tallest building in town. And this year's theme is Building the Next Generation of Local, and it'll feature interactions with top influencers in local, as well as an A-list program that's really coming together with speakers from Amazon and Google and Microsoft and several others. So we hope to see you there, and you can find out more at BrandifySummit.com.
So we're back. My guest is Josh Melick. So Josh, before the break, we were talking about the all-important matter of culture. And you mentioned that the company is based in Oakland. So I want to drill into that a little bit. You know, we love to talk about, you know, companies on this show and kind of what it's like to live and work and operate a business in the cities they're in. And they're all kind of interesting cities. We're talking like Boston and Dallas and Austin, and some of which are like tier two cities that have really had like a renaissance. And I would put Oakland kind of in that bucket, and not in a pejorative sense in calling it a tier two city, but like a city that has really gotten a lot of recognition and advancement for quality of life, for operating a business. So for you, what's it like to kind of run a tech startup there?
Yeah. So first of all, Oakland is warmer than San Francisco.
It is. I'm in San Francisco. I can vouch for that.
No, but I mean, really, it was this idea that, look, we're going to serve small business, and Oakland is has a very local feel to it, and it has a blue collar feel to it, and it has a, diversity and small business, and it has a lot of those characteristics built into the city. It's always kind of been an underdog to San Francisco, and and all of those things, and so that little bit of a chip on the shoulder. It is some of the stuff that helps establish culture. And so this is my point, is you got to use passion and affinity to kind of drive this stuff in your company. So we're passionate about small business. We're passionate about being in Oakland, and we're passionate about serving kind of the little guy. One of the other things that we've done specifically here, I call this engineered casual, like, you know, like we try to be real, like cool and casual about stuff, but we're actually, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff and talking about it. But one of the things that we've done here for a perk is, you know, we've got a lot of younger people that work here, and we give a yearly international plane ticket away. So everyone gets a free international plane flight per year. And this idea is that, like, these are younger people often, and they need to see the world, and they need to kind of understand how the world works. And I think small business plays a big part of that. Like, you know, like a lot of these cultural issues are not, you know, issues of the U.S. or issues of Oakland. These are worldwide human condition cultural issues. And so we try to touch on a lot of that here.
Yeah, that's great. It reminds me of, you know, I'm not sure if this is just like a PR stunt, but Jack Dorsey always likes to promote the fact that he takes the bus. So that, you know, I guess makes him more in tune with kind of the small business kind of proletariat like culture, because Square obviously is a company that serves small businesses. I'm not sure if he actually does that, but I want to get back to some of the things that you're working on today at Broadly from a product perspective, what you're most excited about in this environment, and particularly one thing that you talked about. So you speak at Street Fight Summit a few weeks ago in Brooklyn, was, you know, going back to some of the things we were talking about earlier with network effect and with digital technologies, and their ability to not substitute but enhance this thing that will never go away, which is the IRL factor in real life. So what are your kind of philosophies on that, and how are you infusing that into your product strategy?
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of the IRL is that, look, e-commerce and some of these things are a little bit simpler when it's a closed loop system. Why is local hard? Why is technology in local hard? You know, these are real people. These are offline transactions. We often, from a tech point of view, kind of lose it as it kind of flows offline. You know, so there's a lot of challenges, but software is leading the way, and software, and you know, is touching more and more of every kind of step of the piece, and so there's opportunity for even this in real life and even offline stuff to kind of be transformed by software, from the mobile device we have in our pockets to all the things that we do across technology on a daily basis. And guess what? Even the local business does. To steal a line from Mark Andreessen, is every business will be a software business. Software is eating the world. Yeah. And so, and that's true even in construction and auto services and, you know, all of these, you know, local services. And so we're trying to capitalize on that.
Yeah. And the magic is in the connection of those two worlds, the digital and the physical, of course. And you know, everything that comes with that, allowing it to be trackable, allowing it to kind of do its job in kind of steering us in the right directions in the real world where, you know, life actually happens, as you mentioned. So we're going to move right into our lightning round now, dig a little bit deeper into, you know, some of the things that make you tick. So first off, Josh, what's the profession you'd want to have if you weren't doing what you do now? And I'll ask you about construction along these lines, because having worked construction myself, I love doing it, but it was something that made me realize that I don't want to work construction, and my grades improved and other things. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on some of those more kind of... Go ahead.
Yeah, I love it. I really like it. So, you know, my life goal, I've told a lot of people this, is like, I want an old warehouse in Oakland somewhere. We're going to work on motorcycles. We're going to cars or construction. And we're going to brew beer, distill some whiskey. And so this is my life goal. When I've made it, I'm going to be just hanging out in my warehouse, working on, you know, greasy and dirty, drinking beer and whiskey or gin that we just made off the still. So anyways, that's my life goal. So it's a little bit different.
I love it. I hope I can stop by.
Yeah. You know, I've got it all figured out. You know, we're going to, the tax code, it's going to be a fraternal order.
Nice.
So you can, like, you know, all the money we put into it, it's like a nonprofit, but it's a fraternal order.
Yeah. Well, you have really looked into that. So what's like the company or tech startup that you admire or think would be most exciting to be part of?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I've been following Silicon Valley lore the whole, you know, through kind of my growing up. And so all of them, I think I'd go way back to even like National Semiconductor at Fairchild and like, you know, what kicked
the
all
traitorous
this off.
Eight.
And, you know, yeah. And like, but you know, HP and, you know, all that stuff, I think they're all very cool stuff. That, you know, so I don't know, hard to pick one. But you know, I think it's just all very cool.
Yeah. Fairchild. That's a good bit of trivia right there. That's like deep tracks. That's great.
Yeah.
So similarly, who's someone from the business world that you admire most? So a leader.
Yeah, you know, I watch Steve Jobs a lot. I know this is maybe too common of an answer. Like, I always thought I'd have a chance to meet him. Or, you know, I remember I was an Apple fan from way back. You know, my first computer was an early Macintosh. You know, I've always been a Mac guy, and, you know, watching Steve Jobs, at, you know, Macworld or WWDC and, you know, giving him the pitch on, you know, the iMac to the iPod to the iPhone. Like, I always wanted to have a chance to meet him, and I'm disappointed that I didn't get that chance.
Yeah, me too. So, what superpower would you most want to have?
You know, I've always been, I want to be fast. That's always the skill that I've always kind of liked the most. I've got this like one random memory of kindergarten where like, you know, kind of like half, you know, like negative, like it was like first week of kindergarten, we're supposed to like cut out a rabbit or something out of a piece of paper or whatever, like is drawn on there. And I'm like taking the scissors and I like cut around super fast, and it wasn't perfect, but I was the first one done.
Yeah.
And the teacher comes over and like, you know, like makes fun of me for it. Like, no, you need to cut better along the lines. And I'm like, well, hey, I finished first. Like, you know, so I think that counts for something too. And so, is that, you know, maybe like, is it Dash on The Incredibles or whatever that just like runs, you know, I've always been this, you know, awkward, nerdy kid that like something's happened over there. I like run over there. Everyone else is like walking, I'm like running, you know.
Yeah, and there's the Flash from the DC universe, and what's yeah, the exactly. there's an X-Men that is kind of a similar, I forget his name, but yeah, that's great, and that it seems like a deeply embedded priority with the kind of kindergarten anecdote. And it also reminds me of some of the, I don't know, design principles that have emerged over the last 5 years in terms of like done is better than perfect and move fast and break things. And, you know, speaking against things that are kind of dwelling too much on the perfect. Perfect is the enemy of good. So I think there's a lot of great kind of philosophies buried in there.
Right.
So what are some passions or hobbies that you engage in that help you kind of mentally unplug from work?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of talked about my motorcycle garage. So I love to ride motorcycles. Actually, I'm headed off to Africa on a 2-week motorcycle tour next week. I am very mechanical. I love working on my house and all that stuff. I've you know, bought and sold houses and flipped houses and worked on nice. Houses. And so I love doing all that stuff. I love the hands-on side of it. You know, I mean, I love working in tech and software. It's a lot of EQ and like, you know, people and playing with this and being diplomatic. And I kind of like that hard edge world of, you know, of the physical of construction and mechanical. And so I love just doing all that stuff.
And one thing I've learned that's a byproduct of all of that, like I said, I used to work construction. My kind of aptitude is probably nowhere near yours. But one thing I've noticed is that you become very popular among your friends when you know how to build things and fix things. Yeah. So lastly, what are some of your kind of personal goals for the remainder of 2018 or even going into 2019? We'll just say the near term.
Yeah, you know, the company's at this stage now where we're figuring out how to scale and how to grow up. So, you know, I really want to better delegate and get more VPs in the company and, you know, let them kind of handle more of the day-to-day. You know, I want more time to do things like this and, you know, for both for myself and for the direction of the company. So I think that's kind of where, you know, what I'm trying to work on a lot these days is, you know, delegating some of the day to day of running a company. So,
yeah, time management and delegation. That's great. I think those are nice practical goals. And on that note, we actually have to stop. That's all the time we have. But I want to thank you, Josh, for spending time with us.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure, Mike, as always.
Yeah, and thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and also stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.